everybody. Welcome to Sonic Talk, episode 623, recording today, or, well, live streaming, in fact, today, Wednesday the 17th of June. Just reminded me, actually, we got, after last week's show, and because I've got this new camera, which is a bit sharper, a gentleman got in touch and said, I've got this new animation. He's done a new higher res animation for the intro, which I'm hopefully will have next week, and it'll be all fancy and look really slick and professional and set the show up so that we can then basically just descend into this kind of slightly more pixely version of everything. But anyway, hello, welcome to Sonic Talk. This is the show to do with music technology. We talk about synthesizers, we talk about studio, we talk about live production, we talk about streaming, we talk about all kinds of stuff to do with the technology around recording, creating, and producing music. So please do sit back and enjoy yourself for the next, well, probably about an hour or so. And we want to say thank you very much to our friends over at Isotope. We have, in fact, a prize to give away. This is Ozone 9 Advanced. Then we can get into our guests. We also want to say hello to our chatties. Oh, that's not the right button. I told you I was a bit flustered. Had a bit of technicals. We've got people in the IRC. We've got people on YouTube. We've got people on Twitch where we do the pre-show. And we've got the YouTube chat. And Facebook. That's the other thing I was trying to remember. The Facebook stream. So we're trying to get everywhere we can. We use Restream, in case you're wondering. Restream.io is a good service. It is paid for, but it means one stream out goes to many places at the same time. Right, nice. Welcome. So I better actually introduce some guests. We've got two people here today. We'll start off with Mr. Robbie Bronneman, who's there in Bristol, where he's been wrestling with his slight technicals, but we've got him, even though I think the gas in your chair may be going, because you've just got, you're going down again. You're sort of, there we go. Yeah, I'm not sure. Isn't there a place you could go to have your gas canister re-injected for your studio chairs? There's probably like
a euphemism.
Well, I'm trying. I'm, look, like, you've just got a filthy mind. Filthy mind. It's
translated,
not me.
Poorly.
Yeah, I'm speaking purely technical here, Robbie. I don't know what you're thinking about.
I've been for a long time, so what can I say?
Entendres are us. Yes. How are you, Robbie? Are you well? I hope you are.
I'm very well, thank you. I've been stuck in studio world and dad mode for the last couple of weeks. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it feels, I don't know whether it's just because the news cycle's moved on to other things or whether there's actually a change of scene. You know, I think football starts today in the UK, if anybody's interested. Maybe we can talk about that.
Wow.
But only behind closed doors. Maybe we'll touch on that if we've got time, because I think it's going to be a really interesting audio challenge because there's no audience. And, you know, and anyway, so I don't know whether you'll be following that, Robbie. I mean, I'm not an avid soccer fan, but...
Well, I have to say that I think my greatest achievement in life was when I did get married, was having my wedding day on the FA Cup final day.
Oh, really?
Because I'm not a football follower, and it gave me great perverse pleasure.
Oh, what?
At the time, everyone had little in-ear radios in the church trying to listen to it.
Oh, man. Was there a sort of loud cheer at any point that wasn't appropriate?
I think, knowing us, it probably was. It wasn't any loud cheers. There was just a lot of groans.
Oh yeah, disappointment, endlessly disappointed.
Disappointment, disillusionment.
Yeah. Well, that's always the risk with live sport, isn't it? As much as it is with live streaming, any kind of event, including this one. We will also say hello to Mr. BT, who's there in his studio where he's got the misfortune to be locked up like the rest of us, but I suspect he's having just as much fun as he possibly can. How are you doing, BT?
I'm great. It's so good to be with you guys. And I've been really excited to do this with Robbie as well, too. So it's a pleasure joining you guys. I've looked forward to this since the last one. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, us too. And it's nice to have... Jesus, that is... Is that coffee?
Are you my mom?
Yeah. Like, no, it's massive. I don't know whether it's the foreshortening. You know, it's like the whether it's the foreshortening of it's closer to the camera or it's really that big.
No, this is what we call a coffee mug in America.
Wow,
boys!
But it's not any.
No,
just
it's obnoxiously large. I know that.
Wow.
My apologies.
I don't mind. I mean, it's it's legal and everything. There's no need to be ashamed. I was just commenting on how massive it was. It's like Kickstart. I guess you'll be ready by the end of the show. We won't be able to stop you. You'll be babbling.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I for those that don't know it, and probably I would imagine this is such a common thing amongst producers, but I have pretty, I'd say, moderately severe ADHD and undiagnosed as a kid, which is pretty remarkable because my mom is a psychiatrist. And one of the things that keeps me very focused is coffee. It has the absolute inverse effect on me that it does to most people that don't have ADD or ADHD, which
is interesting.
It just makes me focused. It kind of takes the edges off, and I could drink a triple espresso. So
wow, that's really interesting. So I've also been enjoying very much your sort of positivity, your kind of Facebook positivity about how thankful you are and what you got, which, you know, you've got every reason to be. But I suppose the next question is, how are you doing in lockdown? I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's weird, right? But I suppose the same in some ways.
It is, you know, I mean, to start, it's been a real emotional roller coaster ride, especially with just what's happened here now and a bunch of the protests that are happening in our country,
and
which is something that is, I mean, we all watched a guy get killed on television. It was pretty horrific. People are righteously upset. And the thing that's hard is people were already emotionally dysregulated because, you know, everybody's been in lockdown. It's funny. I find that my friends that are introverts have done really, really well and kind of thrived in this time period. And my friends that are extroverts are really struggling because they miss sort of human points of connection. And so my wife and I are both very introvert, which is weird for, you know, because of what, you know, we do for a living. I found it to be a time of a lot of reflection, you know, and you know, self-care and like a lot of positive work. Like I've been able to accomplish some things during this time period that just would never happen with, you know, travel and shenanigans and all the goings and comings of being a professional musician. So
that's very true.
It's a real number. It's cool to say out loud. In the first part of quarantine, I finished, completely finished. And not like, you know, some like, you know, ambient piece of music or something, like complex, very detailed music. I finished 27 pieces of music at the beginning of quarantine. So, I've just been productive, staying positive, focusing on the water that is in the glass, not what's not in the glass. And, you know, trying to spread that around to people that I love and people that I don't know, too. So, yeah, we're good, man.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that. And it's very interesting. I mean, I take your point. I mean, because without the travel, without the interruptions, you can take a long run at something, you know, because very much like coding, isn't it? You have to hold it in your head all at once. And if you've got to kind of empty your buffer to think about travel or whatever, or doing a show when you're in the middle of a composition phase, it takes time to get back up to speed. So I can totally see how that would work for you. So yeah, 27. So you got them in the bank for later. So you got another couple of albums ready to go.
Yeah, quite literally. Like I'm parsing through stuff at this point and saying like, oh wow, this actually is taking shape as a part of this project and this other thing's taking shape as a part of another project. So yeah, just, you know, like I said, man, staying positive, staying in my lane, staying focused on things that I can control and trying to add to the collective good, you know? So, it's been a very productive time. So
I'm very glad to hear it. That sounds great. Well, and interestingly, things are starting to come online a little bit now because we had a sort of a bit of a lull because everybody was kind of, what's going to happen? We don't know if we're going to be able to get manufacturing done. So there's been quite a lot of a pause. But here's something that's new, eh? Let's take a look at this. New Waldorf Iridium, which is a sort of desktop sort of version. So this is like a desktop incarnation, I would say, of the Quantum, though it's not quite the same architecturally. I think patches are compatible, it just doesn't have some stuff that the Quantum does. Looks a little bit like the Hydrosynth desktop. It's got the Hydrosynth desktop vibe to it, obviously without the touchscreen. So yeah, there it is. So that kind of came out of nowhere. So that's kind of an interesting thing, and that's quite a big. I mean, Robbie, you've got a Quantum, right?
Yeah.
How are you feeling? Are you feeling that is there room on the Quantum for the desktop of this, or is it?
You know me, I haven't got a lot of room, so I do like the desktop things. However, it's not quite the same, is it? Because it hasn't got the proper resonant filters and that you've got on the analog filters like on the Quantum.
That's right.
And it's a slightly different beast. There's not as many knobs, so I mean the design of the Quantum is just such a beautiful design. You know, and it's just so good. It's what I call the OP1 effect. It just makes you want to work with it because it's just so great and well laid out. And it's a little bit more cramped, isn't it? And I know it's 16-note polyphony, so it's twice what the Quantum is. But I think probably I'm going to hang on to the Quantum because I just like the fact that it's as an object and as a unit, I want to program it. I don't know whether I would be quite as inclined with that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. I hear that. Yeah, I actually hear that pretty strongly. I mean, one of the things that, full disclosure too, I have a dog in this fight because I did like a bunch of the factory patches for the Quantum, and I actually helped Rolf design the granular engine for it as well too. I actually have like a pre-bias to this.
Yeah.
But like Robbie said, I couldn't agree with him more. Like Axel Hartman's design of the Quantum is just, I mean, there's metal end caps and the texture of it and stuff. And then of course, yeah, the resonant filter, it's that kind of PPG thing, right? It's like the, wavetables. And of course that has other synth modalities, granular, I just mentioned, but it's got FM and some other really interesting oscillator types. And that just mixed with those analog filters really is a kind of butter and chocolate sort of thing. It's a special instrument, the Quantum. So, but I'm so excited they did that. I think that'll be great for a lot of people. But I'm with Robbie. I'm hanging on to my Quantum for sure.
Oh, interesting. I mean, the Quantum is one of those things. I mean, it looks beautiful. I've not had one I've not been able to play with one. It's one of those things that the closest I got to it in terms of concept, I suppose, is the Hydrosynth, but it's way less complex in many ways because you've only got the one synth engine. Well, this has got many, this has still got five synth engines, and I think it's about $2,000. Let me see if I can find the, we got the page for it here.
$2,199, isn't it?
Well, I got it on Thomann here. $1,990, including VAT from Thomann. But the bad news is in stock, shipping within 8 to 10 weeks. So it's not there yet in terms of it's an early announcement. I suppose that's 2.5 months. That's quite an early go up there. I mean, it's a bit risky that, but I suppose the thing is that's happening and always has and always will is people announce things ahead if they know there's something else coming, because then people will go, let's get people to commit to this now because we don't want to lose the thunder, I suppose.
Interesting the pads on it. I mean, personally, if I was going to buy that desktop, I probably would have wanted this bit more knobs spread out on the unit than putting that sort of those rubber pads. You know, it's a bit, it almost has taken its cue from the Hydrosynth desktop, hasn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really use those pads on my Hydrosynth desktop much either. I wish it was just a little bit more spread out, but it's just a personal thing.
Yeah, I suppose that's fair enough. I mean, well, there's enough space. I mean, you could get you could put a cover on it and maybe put, you could probably fit your cup of coffee on there if you were feeling really, really risky. You wanted to live dangerously. Well, maybe not yours. Maybe a smaller coffee. I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I'm curious as to that. But I mean, I'm glad it exists, and maybe I'll get a chance to look at that. I don't know. I mean, but Tom at Synth Anatomy has already paid. There's a few out there in the wild. We've just not had them. I think the last Waldorf thing I reviewed was the Blofeld 2, possibly, which I did enjoy. But it's a long time ago, so...
Someone put a picture of it up against the Iridium, and it kind of looks like the matching yin and yang brother of each other.
Oh, what, the Blofeld 2?
Yeah, this one here, the Iridium, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Right.
It really does. Man, Nick, you got to get your hands on a Quantum to have a play around with. I'm sure that they would send you over a unit to check out. It is a really remarkable sounding instrument. It really is. It's a very dynamic, alive sounding instrument because of those analog filters. It's something I wanted to mention too, is like, how excited are you guys about seeing stuff like, did you guys see the this Rev 1 thing, the Analog Solutions Rev 1. It's like a, it's an upgrade for Rev 3 Profit 5s that is freaking SSM filter chips. It's 2044 SSM filter chips. They've cloned now SSM. Those are my personal favorite, like love Curtis filters, but those SSM chips, they've now. So imagine with things like that start appearing top modules, you know, freaking SSM filters. This is crazy. Some of the stuff that's happening now, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do tend to see these things. I mean, because the Curtis chips made by the original manufacturers, and also there's, I think, one of the companies that Behringer owned release chips that have those capabilities and 3340s as well. So we're starting to see a lot more of these turning up in URAC modules and desktops, and it makes the manufacturer cost and sourcing parts, you know, a lot. We've talked about this before. I think maybe last time you were on, how did people get the sound of to change. I know I had a chat recently with someone who's a synth designer. It's like, how come different SSMs and Curtis filters and oscillators sound different, even though they're the same chip in, you know, in another synth? And it's, I think there's obviously we're going to see a lot of that stuff happening soon. So that's great.
A big part of that, Nick, is like has spent years of their lives inside of all of these instruments. Like, you know, I mean, certainly there are synths that I have, like the CS80, where I send that out every 4 years to switch it on in Austin, Texas. We actually drive it there, my wife and I, because we don't want to ship it to get recalibrated. I'd never work in that instrument. It's so complex. But simple things, you know, doing recapping or power supplies, MIDI mods, stuff like that. I've worked in all of these instruments myself for years. And one of the things that I can say that is, like, if you compare, for example, something that's sitting right behind me, an original OBXA to a Profit 5, you know, Tom Oberheim to Dave Smith's design. So they use the same oscillator chips. They use, you know, they use similar filters. And so much of the sound of these instruments has to do with the support circuitry, the topography of the support circuitry. And I think that it's why a lot of these surface mount chip versions of these chipsets don't sound as good. And it's not a lot of people like to talk about, because through hole circuits are so much more complex to solder. They're more time intensive. The parts are hard to source. But you listen to an instrument like, what's the guy called? Macbeth. Yeah, and that's all through hole circuitry. That freaking thing sounds like a classic vintage analog synth. Whereas a lot of the new ones that are using similar chipsets don't, because it's surface mount. The support circuitry is, they'll do things like they'll say, oh, it's the exact same, except with a very clean modern op amp. And you're like, it's the exact same, but it's nothing like the original.
Right.
So they're replacing these parts of the circuits that are critical to the overall sound output, and then it's multiplied because polyphonic instruments. So that's some of it. Anyway, a little rant there, but it's a big part of it, the support circuitry.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you're right. It's interesting. But anyway, the Waldorf Iridium, 8 to 10 weeks, couple of grand. I don't know what will be in dollars. I mean, there's probably going to be a premium because it's an you know, it's
that's
a European.
That's about half the price, isn't it? That's about half the price of the keyboard.
Yeah, I think the keyboard is about four, isn't it? $4,000, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a hefty saving for the digital side of things if you want those. I mean, fair enough.
And it's got the latest OS. Build, as you can see. You can see it's got the same lovely design. Axel designed that as well. I mean, it's got the same, you know, the same metal and the same knobs. It's the only instrument I kind of... I had room for one keyboard-based instrument. That's why I kind of favoured the Quantum, because it is just such a lovely thing to work with.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
All right. It'll stay here.
Fair dues. Okay, well, let's... gosh, there's so much still to talk about. I'll tell you what, let's have a word from our friends over at Isotope. We'll do the competition now.
Building on a 17-year legacy in audio mastering, Ozone 9 brings balance to your mix with never-before-seen processing for low-end, real-time instrument separation, and lightning-fast workflows powered by machine learning. Expect lower CPU usage and shorter startup times with Ozone 9 compared to Ozone 8. experience fluid metering in a fully resizable environment that lets you track the most subtle details of your audio. Use more plugins at once, mix while you master without worrying about slowdowns or dropouts. And immerse yourself in a smooth, modern experience designed to keep you in your creative flow. As you can see, Ozone 9 is the fastest way to get your master off the ground. Thank you so much for watching. Be sure to check out our other videos and head to isotope.com to learn more about mixing and mastering and to download your free trial of Ozone 9.
Indeed you can, and we thank them very much for their continued support of the show. They'll be running a competition. In fact, here's how you enter. You just need Twitter, and you tweet the hashtag SmarterAudio, that's one word, and the hashtag Ozone9 to @SonicState and @IsotopeInc. You can win a full Ozone9 advanced copy, which is a peachy bit of software, so well worth entering. You need to be on Twitter, but, you know, there's a good chance. The odds are good. It's well worth doing. And if you want to find out more about it, head over to isotope.com and you can download demos. And there's lots of content, as they say in the video. Very, very useful. So we have a winner from last week, who is somebody called Funk Masaka. At Funk Masaka, they tweeted the right hashtag and whatnot, and the computer picked them. So if you want to get in touch at Funk Masaka, please do, and we will get you your copy of Ozone 9. All right, let's
with the multi-award-winning Cubasis 3, you can quickly on and easily capture your ideas as they arrive wherever you are, right there on your Android smartphone or tablet.
Oh boy.
With Cubasis, you can jam, quickly embrace new musical ideas on the go without interrupting your creative flow.
Don Segales on the voiceover and
intuitively lay down MIDI parts with the
chops are getting very, very good now. So basically, Cubasis 3 is now on Android. Now, where did I find it? I think what you need is you need to have an existing license of Cubase IC Pro. That's the thing, it's not interchangeable. You need one for iOS and one for Android, which is a little bit disappointing. You need an Android 5 point something smartphone or tablet, and you need Google Chrome. And then you're basically good to go. And I'm not sure. I mean, I need to find out if whether it's parity or whether, because quite often you're going to have to release different ones. I mean, obviously, Android is going to be maybe less suited to real-time software instruments going on in there, real-time affecting of audio interfaces, whereas iOS is a bit more kind of optimized as an OS for that. But this is a really big deal. And I imagine, BT, you probably know about this because, I mean, you know, you're involved in the code world, and Android has always been, it's a tough nut to crack, right?
It really is. I'm so excited to see that too. I'm just spilling the tea a little bit. I've heard that, and this is not me starting a rumor. I've heard kind of through the grapevine that they forked the Logic code base apparently, and they're making Logic so that it's going to work eventually on iOS devices, which would be pretty incredible. And whether that's true or not, either way, that's definitely where things are going. These are going to be coming to mobile platforms. I have to say, I use both Cubase and Logic. I use Cubase with a Vienna Pro for my scoring rig, and this crazy, it's like my Synclavier, this crazy PC Audio Labs computer with a couple thousand contact instruments. I use that exclusively with Cubase, and I think that Cubase in many ways is a superior dog. The multiple timelines of automation in the piano roll, articulation mapping, the ability to do like ostinato accent pattern offsets. It does so many things. Macro key commands, right? So you can have one key command fire off a sequence of key commands. It does so many things that other DAWs don't do. And I can't stand that you have to use it with a dongle. I'm like, guys, get it together. It's 2020. Can't we have, some kind of serial protection for this so I can use it on my laptop without worrying about breaking my now USB-C port every time I sit down with a laptop? But it's exciting to see these things happening. I'm sure Robbie's got a bunch of thoughts about this too. Robbie, what would you think about seeing, Robbie, you're exclusively Logic, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I dip in and out of Logic and Ableton. Yeah.
That's right.
So, I mean, I had this funny experience because there was a time when Logic was like sort of flagging behind, particularly with stuff to picture. And I was like, I'm just going to jump ship. And I got Cubase, the full Cubase thing. And I sat down with it and I was right. And it was right at the start of the project. And I was just like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here. I can't work out anything. Cause it was the wrong time to do it. It was basically like I had a deadline and I was sitting there going, right. I don't even know how to quantize this. You know, I don't even know how to
quantize. You don't quantize, surely.
It's like with my arms tied behind my back and sort of like bobbing apples or something. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. So it got the short thrift. But I mean, I'm well aware of the pat. I mean, you know, Gaz is a massive Cubase user.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
there are so many good things that, you know, there's so much good stuff in Cubase. You know,
well, we've done this before, haven't we? Where we've talked, because they are one of the people, or were for a period, one of the door manufacturers who were pushing the envelope, and other people were starting to pick up on their things. I mean, now, you know, we've got Studio One coming in, and obviously Bitwig, and so there is. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just the fact that this will run on Android. I mean, I've got an Android phone, but I'm not sure I want to run Cubasis on it. But I mean, I think. This is such a sort of watershed moment, that the fact that there's something this complex and this, what is essential, because on Cubase on iOS is actually pretty cool. Gaz uses it for recording rehearsals and you know, can do pro, you know, it takes his iPad Pro, plugs it into the I think it's the Behringer XAIR 18 and records everybody, sets up the monitor mixes, you know, the whole thing is done, and he multi-tracks in Cubase. So I mean, now that this will work on Android devices, it's almost worth getting an Android device that's spec'd enough to kind of, you know, big enough screen to start doing that, because they're way, way cheaper. I mean, it's just a question of whether or not, like I say, there's parity and how well it performs in real time, because that's the big question, I think, in many ways.
Yeah, like what sort of buffer you have to run it at. Like plug-in latency. I would love to bench something like that myself, but you're right, man. It's an exciting time to be alive for things like that, because so many things that we take for granted as being these stationary objects where you have to work, you know, in these stationary environments are eventually going to become portable. I mean, there it is.
Absolutely. You know? Well, imagine, so. You know, I mean, in the same way that the reason iOS is so pervasive, it's easy to forget this. It was because of music applications at the beginning. That's what basically built that platform. I mean, it was iTunes. You could listen to your iTunes stuff on it, but also the music creation stuff, the little widgets and the apps. They're the things that created this wow factor around it. And Android's never really had that. And this could be the moment where it's like, okay, let's go. You know, and we could start to see maybe, you know, something really starting to push. And I don't know whether or not... I guess because ARM chips are mostly in Android devices as well, and Apple are moving to ARM, so we're gonna see this kind of, the code base is gonna be of a similar, somewhere under the hood, it's gonna be of a similar nature, even though the operating systems are different. Maybe we're gonna end up, you know, we're gonna start to see parity a bit more, and that this could have been the beginning of it. I think it could be an important moment, even though perhaps it's not that thrilling because it's a solo effort at the moment from one of the big people. I mean. You know, if Korg start, because Korg have been pushing the envelope on iOS as well, if they start pointing their lens at Android, then maybe, you know, those two companies between them could do a hell of a lot for Google operating systems, I think. Definitely.
Anyway, yeah, that's crazy.
I just thought it was worth a shout out. Oops, that's a black screen. Okay, what's next? Let's see, guys. Only 25 to, so we got a bit more time. So, this was the AES virtual convention, Vienna. Essentially, I think AES is a funny organisation because you have to be a member, and it's designed to be, you know, people who own recording studios and stuff. So it's quite closed, and it's professional grade, and membership costs a bunch of money, and all of the stuff that they do at the conventions. Outside of the, you know, the kind of public show floor or the visitor show floor is usually paid for. So the idea with this was, you know, you're a member, you pay to join, and then you can access all of that video. But it seems to be, it's sort of heralding, you know, we're now in a situation where, you know, are these large public gathering events people are going to be shying away from? Are we at another watershed, which is, you know, trade shows, not so much anymore. What's going to happen? What do you think? And would you Are you going to miss it? Robbie, I'll go to you first, because, I mean, you used to do a lot of trade show work, didn't you? I mean, I think that's when I first met you. You were doing TC stuff and as a demo guy, and I think you did some Novation as well. So, you know, you've lived the trade show life.
Yeah,
do you miss it?
I wonder if things like NAMM are going to happen next year. Whether it's going to be like the very dwindled numbers of people.
International visitors, I think. May have to go, but, you know, it's going to be, I reckon it's going to be down a lot.
It's going to be a ghost town, I reckon.
It's crazy times, man. I mean, I think Robbie's probably right. I'm concerned it will be a ghost town. It's funny, right before things got locked down, I was supposed to perform at Synthplex, Michael Boddicker's event, which, by the way, is one of the most incredible things I've ever been to. They did it last year, and it's like kind of a mini NAMM, but it's all synthesizers. It was like the Wailing Wall of Mecca for synthesizers and people that love synth music. It was one of the coolest things ever. And Jean-Michel Jarre was keynoting and, you know, going to perform this year. And Michael obviously moved it. He moved it to the fall. But here's what I think. I'm going to take a middle road approach to this. I think that convention culture is going to stay around. I hope that the prophetic words, I think that convention culture is going to stay around, but I think we are going to continue to practice. There are things that have happened during this coronavirus thing that are going to remain. So I think something like NAMM will happen, but you're going to see everybody in masks and keeping distance and not shaking hands. So it's going to change the dynamic of it. But I think that we're going to, learn to live with not only coronavirus, but whatever the next one is down the road, because it's just a part of being, you know, on a planet. These kind of things happen, you know, periodically.
Sure.
So, you know, SARS was, what, 10 years ago? And thankfully that didn't get out of control. But I think this has made people aware that, you know, like, for example, handshaking, that's hard for me because I love, like, you know, hugging my friends and shaking hands and stuff. I think that that's not going to be the same after this. But I do think conventions will happen. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think maybe they'll become more national rather than international. So the kind of the bulk travel, which may become prohibitively expensive, will mean that they become more fixed in the countries in which they happen. And there'll be obviously online streaming and stuff. And that's where hopefully we'll be able to step up and do some stuff like we did with Superbooth. But yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. I don't know, Robbie, have you got a vision, or do you think
what BT is saying is right. Whether we'll stay in that kind of sort of stasis of like forevermore being wary about kind of being tactile, or whether it's just like a gradual progression. I guess the litmus test will be is if we have anything else that kind of rears its head again in the near future. If we can kind of go a year and see it all kind of dwindle away and kind of feel like kind of we've kind of, you know, got on top of it, perhaps, you know, over time people will start to relax with that kind of interaction again. But I guess that there's definitely like a stage. It's like steps, you know, we're at, and then everyone's going to kind of walk down those steps based on how the world kind of copes, isn't it? So let's hope that we don't just go move from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, you know, so that we can all get back to that place.
There is going to be a sense of paranoia, I think, to a degree. But yeah. I think it's challenging because, I mean, now, you know, we spent a lot of time designing and figuring out how we were going to do the Superbooth stuff. And we've got some ideas about how we could perform a similar function without having to all. And also, it's not just that, it's the acceleration of the fact is like, why does it all happen in one concentrated lump? I mean, obviously you get a load of eyeballs and a lot of focus, but it's hard to get your news out there, it's hard to reach your audience. I mean, you've got more of a chance, I suppose, in a trade show. It's very expensive to attend. There are lots of things that you could think, well, if I could spend, you know, I don't know what, say a booth like, I don't know, Spectrasonics, let's just take a guess. I'll take a guess and say that maybe costs 20, 30, 40 grand to have a booth there. Possibly way more than that. I don't know.
Times
10. All right, 200
Nick,
grand. Let's say 200.
Literally times 10. I know some numbers around those booths. They're unbelievably expensive. Carry on.
Okay. All right. Well, that's okay. Well, so there we go. So what could you spend? $100,000 or $200,000 on. You know, you could hire some content creators. You could use existing platforms like us, you know, to reach your audience. You can create your own TV channels. There's all sorts of things that you could do with that money. And that's every year. You know, you wouldn't need to spend that every year. You might need the first time to tool up. I think there's going to be some imaginative ways to people to reach their audiences. And it's just going to be, again, it's acceleration of what we thought is probably going to happen in much the same way, like the use of cash is sort of really dropped off during this. You know, there's all sorts of spin-offs. Anyway, I just thought it's kind of an interesting thing to talk about. And I get, it does sort of tie in a little bit to another topic which you have, which is obviously the arts are very important in times of isolation, in times when you can't go out. And we've sort of consumed it all. You know, we've done our 3 months of maybe watching all the movies that were made recently, seeing all the plays, listening to all the records, doing all that stuff. So now what happens? And some of the governments, I mean, some of the really progressive ones like New Zealand, who seem to be a blind, I mean, God, don't we all wish we lived in New Zealand in some ways? You know, they are such a cool and brilliant way of running things, at least to my mind. And Germany have put massive, like €500 million Germany have put into the arts and continue to do so, to fund. And that's all great. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, the US is probably putting some into it, you know, the UK, but these are just headline figures that I picked up. But the question is really, what do you spend that money on to kind of, to get us, you know, to do that next stage thing? What is the sort of thing that would make sense, you know, because obviously we've got all these live performers. I mean, how do we repurpose those skills and all of that stuff to reach the audience using the funding that may or may not be available in the country that's near you? I don't know. Robbie, you perform, you tour. I mean, some of that's great fun. Some of it's a drag. You know, have you got any ideas? Have you started to formulate any?
I was even talking to Howard the other day, you know, about everybody's rushing now, aren't they, to try and get up to speed with being able to. So rehearsal spaces and places like that, I know loads of those sort of places in LA which are like lying dead and empty are kind of rushing to tool up to kind of make their spaces available for bands to be able to come in and do like a, you know, an online concert feed and all that kind of thing. So I think we should see you know, governments and councils thinking about sort of perhaps, you know, making those sort of facilities for each kind of major city so that bands can go and, you know, do those kind of performances and kind of think a little bit more internationally about the audience. Because, you know, it's still in its infancy, really, isn't it? This kind of pandemic's kind of pushed everyone to suddenly scramble on how can we, from our homes or from wherever, transmit, you know, and give people the best possible experience with regards to visually and audio and all that kind of. So, it's, I mean, it'd be nice to see like an investment of money into kind of finding spaces, you know, so you could go and do that as a band somewhere professionally, kind of very locally to yourself, to be able to kind of.
Interesting. So like licensed venues that are also streaming centres and could actually just, you know, so you could do the gig. There maybe could be enough of an audience in there for a vibe that would be safely done, but you would stream it out and figure out. That's interesting. That Flaming Lips get, I don't know if everybody saw that, where they're all in bubbles and the audience are in bubbles. I don't know what's behind it, but I don't know whether that's actually a thing or just happens to be, oh, didn't they do this once and wouldn't that work now? But I'm not sure. I think there almost needs to be a brain trust to kind of go, okay, how's this going to work? And we all need to step up to sort of go, I've had an idea. Who do I tell? You know, how do we do it? But maybe that's what's going to happen in terms of that sort of pure capitalism type of thing, where people come up with a great idea, they figure out how to do it, and, you know, then they're off and everybody follows and you get market leaders and what. Maybe that's what's going to happen. I don't know. I mean, what do you think, BT? I mean, you're involved in both sides of this, and a live gig is a very special event with a big audience. I mean, you can't do it in any other way quite, can you?
You really can't. I mean, it's a complex, multifaceted thing. I have a lot of thoughts about all this. I love Robbie's idea too. You know, one of the things that I'd like to see is a divestment of that money on music education, because I don't know if it's the same for you guys in the UK, but, in America, we are losing music programs like they're going out of style. And of course, there's all kinds of scientific and empirical data correlating mathematical aptitude, general happiness and well-being, ability to focus on exposure to musical training. It's great for everyone, not just for people that are musicians. So that's just kind of an ancillary thought I had when you were talking. But I have to say, insofar as the music community, my peers, my friends that rely solely on travel, it's been a pretty violent wake-up call that they need to be divested in other things, or they need to be invested, rather, in other things. And I think that a lot of people, it hurts me to watch. I mean, there's so, you know, without naming names, especially in the DJ community, you know, I have close friends that, you know, are A-list DJs that support a team of 15 people, you know, a manager, an agent, a tour manager, you know, a social media person, someone that runs their website, on and on and on and on. And they live hand to mouth because they have an extremely high overhead and they make huge show fees. But with, you know, all the shows dried up and people not able to perform, they're having to let people go and, you know, closing parts of record labels and all this kind of stuff. And so I think it's a real wake up call for some people in the music community, like, hey, we need to be spread in different directions for when things like this occur. And I also have to say, just going back, and this is my last thought about this, is going back to your first point, Nick, my hope is, and again, putting this out in the ether because it's my great hope, is the sense of community that comes from live performance is there's not something that can get the kind of sense feeling of that being with a group of people you know you don't know, watching a band that you love, dancing to a DJ that you love. It's an experience that I want people to still get to have. So my hope is that we're going to learn more about the coronavirus and understand how it's transmitted. If it's transmitted on surfaces, like, what is it? Are there post effects? You know, what is the actual mortality rate? How many people actually have been infected with this? Is it as bad? Should we all be as panicked as we have been? Yeah. All of these are open questions, and that we can return to a sense of community, because without that, just as a species, I think without that point of connection, of being able to see one another and to share and participate in the experience of listening to music together, I think a lot of people will feel really lost. So I hope that we can return to that over
time.
Well,
this kind of takes me back to my initial point at the beginning, which was about the football, you know, or sports in general, where things are being held behind closed doors. So you need a reactive, the crowd generate the energy. There's this reactive energy that happens around that. So there are two problems to solve. Certainly today's football match, you know, maybe they need a DJ who has a selection of crowds, a near miss, you know, a comedic falling over, sort of, a goal, a really good goal, you know, and they could just, a general bed of like, hooray, mumble, mumble, mumble. Maybe that there's a way in which that technology could be used, you know, say you had a Zoom meeting with 1,000 people in it, and you were playing in front of those people, and there was a way for their feedback to come back to you into the room somehow, then we're starting to get into a collective experience then. I mean, it has to be very real time. And that's the thing. I mean, the video conferencing has become incredibly real time in many ways. I mean, it's just a question
of... It's true.
It changes, because when you're streaming an event, it's a very different experience. Like what we're doing now, what people are seeing now is delayed by however many seconds it takes to go through the you know, the encoder. What we're doing together, this thing, is real time. We are seeing and reacting to people in real time. It's maybe a quarter of a second. The technologies are very different. You know, that we're able to do this. And this is one of the big problems that we had, which was to try and solve how to, like, say, BT, if you wanted to go, I'd like to play some music for you live right now. How do we do that? And then I can then pass that on into the world and we can have a real time reaction of all that. These are the things that will probably shape what happens in terms of music and collective music, because there will be things like, you know, certain parts of the world, it will be okay. So maybe what you could do is like they did with the World Cup, you know, the Soccer World Cup. They put a big screen up in the centre of town where it's okay, for, like in New Zealand, pile the speakers out. They have a really good MC, maybe a support band. And then whoever, you, for instance, you know, or Howard Jones does a gig from London and it all happens in real time and everybody's really thrilled. And, you know, do you see what I mean? That I think those are the sort of things that are going to start happening. And then we'll just be replacing that sort of sweaty being in a room together and experiencing the bass, and the things that happen, but it'll just be slightly different. So I think those are the things that maybe technologically are very close to happening. It's just not quite. Sorry, Robbie.
They could do a football match, couldn't they? You know, all those screens they utilise all the way around pitch, for instance, for advertising. If people could zoom in on it, and then they put a massive sound system that effectively teams could play matches with feedback from thousands of people around those sort of things into the stadiums or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I don't think that's unreasonable. I mean, obviously, the sponsors kind of need to be there as well, but there's got to be a way for that sort of thing to happen. And it'll be, maybe that's a special ticket or something. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's not impossible.
I guess the linchpin of that is that how much do you make investment into putting those infrastructures in place to a really great degree if the best case scenario we do go back to normality and then those things are just left redundant till the next time.
It's such a great point Robbie's making there. And also, too, something that I hear both of you saying is you're talking about sponsorships, investments, and that brings up a very big kind of macro conversation, which is how genuine are kind of the tech companies that are in the MI space, and is there going to be an actual trickle down to the people creating the media? And I could drill down on that really specifically. Look what just happened with Facebook Live. So everybody gets locked down. DJs don't have sets to play. And they're like, you know, like I said before, they have all these, you know, people to support if that's like their livelihood. So they go, okay, well, I'm going to get online and I'm going to stream. So they get on Facebook and they start streaming and their streams get shut off because Facebook would have to pay a fractional royalty on those songs to BMI, ASCAP, your performing rights union in England. And instead, they have other people generating content they don't have to pay a royalty on. So I think that it's going to involve the MI and music tech community to making a fair model, much the same as when Spotify started. If they just charged everyone $10, as opposed to trying to aggregate end users and then flipping their IPO shares for leveraging RIP, which is what they did. The elephant in the room no one wants to talk about. If they just charged $10 to start with, they could be paying everyone a fair royalty now. So that's like smart Silicon Valley people not thinking about the musicians that are creating the content. So I think it's the onus is on us as a music community to come up with and lead and drive some of these ideas so we can support and take care of other musicians. That's my two cents.
Hopefully what actually does happen is that is what happens. The live content is valued and has some way of being paid for or whatever, rather than just kind of go, everybody going, no, we can't do that anymore. It'll cost. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for goodness sake, you know, these big megacorps have got so much money that surely there's a bit of spare to go around to solve these kind of problems. And, you know, let's have a little bit of philanthropy, perhaps, you know?
Yeah.
For the arts.
Yeah, like I said, Nick, it's like if, you know, we want the arts to stay around, you know, we need to support the arts community, you know, for it to flourish and thrive. The elephant in the room too is AI. Is like all of this is happening right at a time where things like, you know, Google Magenta is making tremendous strides. All of us have made these huge training sets that live on the internet that all these major technology focused companies can use for training neural networks to, you know, that are generative to create music. So it's a crazy, over the next 5 to 7 years, things that people think of as like these Black Mirror type things are all going to be household conversations. So it's a crazy time we're living in.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating, I mean, it's outside of our usual scope, but I mean, I think it's really important we talk about this stuff because this is all going to be changing in our lifetimes in the very near future and sort of now
absolutely.
In many ways. And so we have to be ready to make sure it doesn't go badly, I suppose.
Right, that's right.
That's the kind of key thing. Gentlemen, it feels. I don't know if we've got. Have we got another one here? Oh yeah, multi effects. We can start on something. Here we go. I'm going to play a little short bit of video, which is featuring the. This is the Felt Me Escape. The multi effects I've just discovered. Which, if I can get it into focus.
Oh, sick! I saw that in your email. What is that thing?
I've got this video here, which is. It's basically. This is just a poly D into this thing called Particle Verb, which was one of six possible effects. Switch to square waves. And I recently added a delay to this, and I was jamming
to
the same synth.
Literally, stereo out into this. And
this thing's like $100 or $90.
I'm buying this on Amazon right now, and I'm actually serious.
And the thing about this is just the oscillators do sound really nice.
Anyway, you can watch that. It was a Friday Fun, and I didn't expect it to be all that, but it seemed to chime with. And this, so, we're using... other stuff, but this is a really interesting multi-effects, but it really wasn't a plug for this because I haven't reviewed it or anything. I mean, we bought it because somebody said it was cool, and it is cool, and I'll spend a bit more time on it. But it was more like, what do you reach for? What sort of multi-effects do you use, if any? I mean, I know most of you guys are working in the box, but is there something that you kind of, I mean, with maybe from the DAW effects, what are you reaching for? I'll come to you, that's not you, that's you, Robbie. Do you have anything like that that you just kind of go, oh, I'll plug it into that and I'll find something that works.
Through circumstances, I got rid of all my kind of sort of hardware effects a few years back. But I've had this obsession for the last 3 years for wanting the Otto Machines Bim Bam Boom. And I had them on back order because they've been forever like not in production. And they're finally arriving this in about a week's time. So I'll have those back in, connected up to all the modular stuff. So I'm very excited. So finally, I'll have some outboard effects, but they're fantastic.
Ah, interesting. I'm just looking for that. I'm trying to find it. Effects. Is that which one of those is it? Let's have a look.
It's all three. I've got all three coming.
Bim, bam, and boom. I do beg your pardon. Yeah. That's how uneducated I am in multi-effects. Yeah. All right, and also they will obviously fit your aesthetic because they're all of the same and there's no wood and they're black.
I've always been a massive fan of the Biscuit, so...
Yeah, that's great.
I do have that. That's the only hardware thing I've still, got. So, yeah, I guess I do reach for that, although we have got that on the UAD platform as well now.
Well, it's interesting. I think it might have been the first 5 minutes we did this series where we just kind of get you 5 minutes with something. And I think the Otto Biscuit was the first one. And it sounded fantastic and people reacted very well to it.
Yeah.
I have a feeling, BT, that you've probably got a list.
All right, you guys ready? Let's do this. I do, actually. I love... effects, and I love the kind of discovery process with effects, because we're just doing with the Poly D, it's a magical experience, man, just taking an OP1 or a small mono synth and running it through a guitar pedal can yield some of the most exciting, remarkable, wonderful things ever. So some of my favorite effects are actually guitar pedals. I've got some favorites behind me in the rack. I kind of keep my favorites out all the time. So like the you guys would say H3000, the one with the Curtis filter chips in it. I love the Insonic DP4 is another absolute favorite of mine for a multi-effects unit. I've got these old Roland reverbs here, Lexicon reverbs and stuff. I have to say, of pedals, my favorite pedal over the last couple years, and it's just air quotes a reverb, but it's a remarkable sounding reverb, is that Empress reverb. Is absolutely brain-breakingly good. So I love effects. I love hardware effects, and it is really exciting for me, actually. And Robbie knows this because he's on our beta. But like in the box stuff, I'm constantly trying to think of how to recreate the discovery process of putting your hands on knobs. Those kind of like happy accident sort of things, Brian Eno would call it. And a lot of those ideas are in what I've been working on for like the last 2 years. And we kind of touched on it last time, but It's about to be in everyone's hands. So it's probably the most crazy multi-effect I've ever seen in my life, actually. So,
is this the thing that we trailed that you might be mentioning, or is this something else?
Yeah, no, this is the thing that so I have to be careful exactly what I say about this. Next week, actually, we're going to be launching this thing that I've been working on for close to 2 years now. And without going into great detail what it is, it is in fact an incredibly sophisticated multi-effect unit that every single parameter in it has a very complex automation curve that is all bound to clock. And this thing makes sounds I've honest to God never heard in my entire life before. And a big part of its design is trying to recreate the excitement and the feeling of working with hardware. So it's a playable multi-effect unit, and it's in partnership with the Isotope guys. So,
Is it hardware or is it software? I'm not.
It's software.
Software. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So that's to kind of stand by for that. And I mean, Robbie knows exactly what I'm talking about, but
it's
crazy. I got a phone call from.
You're going to die, as BT would say, you're going to die.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I hope not, but I mean, I look forward.
No, you literally are going to freak out so hard. I mean, like, I'll just tease one little thing. So, one of the things in this is it's tons of different types of digital signal processing operations. One of the thing in it is a reverb unit, but to call it reverb is like, I actually thought about breaking this one module out and making its own plugin. So in a modular world, you have all these unusual, cool, you know, Tip Top Audio ZDSP, you know, Make Noise Herb Verb. There's all these unusual reverbs in the modular world. But if you're not using a modular system, you don't have access to things like that in the computer. And even if you do, they don't have the kind of intuitive nature of some of the Eurorack style effects. So I built a reverb that has over 10 parameters that can all be modulated in real time to clock. And the reverb module alone in this makes sounds like you're being pulled through a wormhole at light speed. Like, I've never heard anything like my life.
Is it algorithmic? Algorithmic reverb, presumably, right?
It is. It's an algorithmic reverb with a single mode, but all of these parameters that can be modulated in real time. And what's so crazy is you can do these very complex kind of wormhole sounds, as I mentioned, but you can also, too, do things like side chaining the wet dry of a reverb and slightly changing its pre-delay so the reverb shifts in pitch over time. So you can go from very, very simple to very, very complex. And that's just one part of this thing.
That's interesting. That's a technique that the Dreadbox people use. They've got the reverb, and the reverb, you modulate the pre-delay. And it's a really effective way of creating quite bonkers modulated reverb. I don't know if that's what you do when you're making a modulated reverb, but maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it works. It works a treat.
Yeah, no, I love that reverb. This is very different. I mean, the modulation source in this plugin paradigm, you're able to both slew, so you can interpolate between two points. You can change the alpha of that, so you can go in a linear fashion, exponentially, logarithmically, or you can step, so you can do sample and hold type operations. So if you slew between two pre-delay or two, there's a post-delay in it as well. I'm giving away way too much stuff now, but there's a ton of different parameters that if you slew, you're going to get these beautiful kind of liquid metal bending sounds. But if you jump, you get artifacts that are freaking crazy. And you can combine slewing and jumping in the same modulation source.
Wow, okay. That sounds great.
It's freaking crazy, man.
So was this by design, or was it you just go, let's try that, and you go, oh my goodness, listen to that. That's something I wasn't expecting.
It's some of both. It's funny. We have an expression that's very common in software design that's called scope creep. And what that means is your ideas have ideas, right? Like, as you discover things, you discover things that you want ever. And so it's some of that, but it's also some of, I wanted to make a reverb that does something that another reverb doesn't do. But every single plugin, or rather effects operation in this plugin, has that same sort of modulation paradigm. So it just makes, I mean, it makes the craziest sounds. Honestly,
oh, wow. Okay. You've got us all excited now. So we're going to have to, basically, so what day is this happening? Is there an actual date, or is this a sort of possibly?
There
date?
Is. Yeah. It's the 24th. We launch on the 24th. So,
right. So stay tuned. Okay. That sounds fun. You make sure you send us all the relevant gump, and we can make sure that we're on top of that. All right, brilliant. Definitely. Well, thank you. Sure. Thank you for that little teaser there, Brian. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I guess we're probably at the end of our show. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. We want to say, don't forget, if you want to enter to win the competition for the Isotope Ozone 9 Advance, we're looking for the hashtag Smarter Audio, one word, and the hashtag Ozone9 to @SonicState and @IsotopeInc. That's a Twitter competition. You just tweet those words. I mean, and anything else you fancy in the same tweet. It's always, I know that they monitor it fairly diligently, and it's always nice to see. So thank you to them for the prize. And don't forget, you can get in touch if you won. Who's the person who won? I've forgotten now. Funk Masaka, there we go. So Funk Masaka,
don't forget
to get in touch. Yeah, it's almost difficult.
So cool.
You see it, and then you think you're going to pronounce one word, and it's actually not that word that you pronounce.
Musaka,
yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
but Jen, Robbie, thanks for joining us. I hope you're back. Are you back to your label work now? Are you working on film? What's your?
No, I'm actually just working on my own music at the moment. Doing a project with BT.
Plug yourself, Robbie. Tell everybody.
Yeah,
what you're
doing. I'm working on my own EP.
Yes.
It's just full on synth glory.
Excellent.
It's amazing too. Yeah. Robbie's coming out of his shell and making like some absolutely ripping synthwave tracks.
Nice.
Like ridiculous.
Good.
Well, that's good. Well, there you go, Robbie. That's a bit of extra US hype for your for us distinctly
ripping
British.
No hype ripping. Is true, man. Wait till
you heard it here first.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's
we look forward to that. When's that scheduled then? Has that got a schedule, or are you still in the creative?
Well, I've got to talk to Brian actually, but I'm aiming to be finished by the end of August of actually finishing the music. So
right,
yeah,
cool, excellent. All right, and. Yeah. BT, thank you also for joining us from
my
your lovely
pleasure.
Synth room. And it's nice to see you're flourishing, and you've got lots of stuff coming out. All those 27 tracks and whatever it is that we're going to see next week, we're going to be looking forward to.
Yeah, it's great to see you, Nick. And I hope that we do have NAMM so I can come in and
fight upon. Yeah.
Ultimate support again. Yeah. Thanks for having me, man.
You're all more than welcome. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you very much, everybody. It just remains for us to sort of wave ourselves off. I'll do the usual. There's only three there, but we'll see you all next time. Thank you so much, everybody. That is the end of Sonic Talk, episode 623. Bye-bye now.